Bristol is a town of historical contradictions. Its wealth came from the slave trade, yet it also boasts the oldest 4th of July celebration in the United States, a town that went from repudiating human freedom to embracing it. Bristol was founded in 1680 by four Boston merchants who paid the British crown £1,100 for the land. The Wampanoag tribe, who for generations used the land as a summer gathering place, had lost it in the King Philip's War a few years earlier. The merchants set out planning a town with unusually wide streets for the period, notes retired Roger Williams University history professor Kevin Jordan.
The width of our original streets are original. So High Street and Hope Street are all the original width, which is extremely wide, unlike, say, the narrow streets of Boston or Providence or Newport even. So it was a very rational, laid-out town. The founders then nearly divided the land up into lots. When the settlers came in, they had to be voted into living in town, be approved.
From the outset, Bristol drew its strength from its natural harbor. It was here that livestock and produce were shipped to other colonies and abroad. Bristol farmers were especially adept at growing onions, which were then in high demand because they prevented scurvy. At its founding in 1680, Bristol was part of Massachusetts. It would remain so until 1747 when the crown awarded it to Rhode Island. Bristol's dark passage into the slave trade began in the mid-1700s when Mark Anthony DeWolf came to town. He tried his hand at slaving but wasn't very successful at it. His five sons, on the other hand, became rich men off the slave trade, owning not only the ships used in the voyages, but the distilleries that made the rum and the Cuban plantations that fueled them with sugar and molasses. They even owned their own bank and insurance company.
My DeWolf ancestors were known as the great folk in Bristol.
In the documentary Traces of the Trade, 10 members of the DeWolf family traced their ancestors' involvement in the slave trade.
There were professors and writers, artists and architects, and many Episcopal ministers.
They learned that the family was responsible for the importation of 10,000 slaves over a period of about 50 years. The descendants of those slaves could number 500,000 today, according to James DeWolf Perry, one of the DeWolf family members who participated in the making of the documentary.
Tell me what all you learned about the role the family played in the slave trade at the late 18th and early 19th centuries.
Well, it turns out that the DeWolf family was by far the family that was most involved in the slave trade in the United States. James DeWolf and his extended family sent out more slaving voyages than anyone else in the history of the United States. Rhode Island as well was the leading state in terms of the slave trade. Bristol was the city more than any other in the United States that sent out slaving voyages.
How profitable was this slaving?
Slaving was extraordinarily profitable. James DeWolf, when he died, the newspapers reported that he was the second richest man in the United States.
The DeWolf family may have dominated the Bristol slave trade, but they weren't alone in it. Barrel makers profited by making kegs for rum. Iron makers crafted the shackles that would be used to harness the slaves. And ordinary citizens, lured by the promise of a 25% return on their money, bought shares in the slaving ships. During the American Revolution, the British Navy bombarded Bristol twice, looted and burned it. Perhaps that's why there was such great rejoicing when on July 4, 1777, British troops heard 13 cannon fires from Bristol in apparent celebration of the first anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It would be the first in Bristol's long line of 4th of July celebrations, according to town clerk and amateur historian Lou Cirillo.
So I think that there was a terrific celebration when the British were defeated after the Revolutionary War, and Bristol was part of one of the places that was kind of one of the epicenters of that time due to its direct attack. So Bristolians likely embraced the idea of their independence maybe a little bit more strongly than places that had not been directly attacked and carried on the tradition.
By the 1820s, the slaving voyages had ended, and the DeWolfs turned their attention to the Industrial Revolution. They built textile mills that spun into cloth cotton imported from the South, some of it undoubtedly grown by slaves they had exploited. In time, textile mills and a huge rubber plant provided thousands of jobs in this East Bay town. There was a time when Bristolians never had to leave town, notes town clerk Lou Cirillo.
Bristol, for most of its existence, pretty much was an island. Even though it's a peninsula, it was kind of a self-contained community up until, 50-odd years ago. Pretty much everybody that lived in Bristol worked in Bristol. There were loads of manufacturing jobs, employing thousands of people, that there was very, very little reason to go anywhere else.
Most of the textile plants and the rubber mill are gone now. Today, Bristol is primarily a bedroom community of Providence, with an active boat building industry and Roger Williams University as its main economic engines. Its biggest draw is what it comes by naturally: spectacular views of Narragansett Bay, the park-like setting of its downtown, distinctive housing stock, good schools, and a strong sense of community. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.